All right, everybody, and welcome to the first edition, really, of our daily pre-recorded show, as opposed to our daily live show. For various reasons now, we are coming to you on iTunes and Spotify, as opposed to YouTube, audio only. But we hope we've got guests lined up that will make it all worthwhile. So first of all, I should say that my name is Nick Draper, and welcome to the show. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deacon. Stu, you want to say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody.
And George is also here as well.
Hello.
We can't get rid of him. We try, but every day he turns up. But we've also got, for this first edition of the lockdown podcast, to give it any sort of name, our club captain, Will Nightingale. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, not at all. We've got a lot of questions lined up for you, Will, to keep the viewers entertained, but I have to get this out of the way first, just because you have been on the podcast before.
Yeah, I have. This isn't my debut, not my first rodeo, this one.
Yeah, this is your second appearance. I gave you an either-or question when you first came on the podcast.
Oh, I know what's coming.
I can't let it go. So, do you remember what question it was, and do you remember what answer you gave?
I do, yeah.
Would you like to explain to the listeners what that was?
I think I was doing a quick round-fire question, and it got to the last one, and was it, I had to choose between either Watford or Luton, and you, obviously at the time, I didn't know who your other connections were with other clubs. I've ended up going for Watford, who's probably in more recent times, in my eyes, a bigger club.
Great stuff.
Having reassessed and having seen your reaction to the answer, for your sake I'll change it to Luton. I mean, Luton are on the up and coming, and they were a massive club back in the, what was it, probably the 70s, 80s. Obviously they got a massive history, so I'll change my answer to Luton after rethinking it.
Thank you very much. Thank you, much appreciated.
I've got that sort of thing.
Of course, when you were last on the show, this was, well, prior or before we started asking about how people make a cup of tea. So we've got another very important either or question we'll have for you at the very end of the show. It's very important you get that one right. I'm just going to say that now, but we'll get to that. Yeah. In terms of yourself then, lockdown.
Yeah.
How are you finding it? So whereabouts, are you Worcester Parkway? Is that right? Or have I got that wrong?
No, so I've recently moved out around June time with my partner, so I'm not too far from where my mum and dad was. I'm finding it okay. I go in and out of phases, like I'm sure we all are. Get sometimes you're quite bored and not much to do, but I'm trying to do odd jobs like painting and just little things to keep myself busy. But we just got to keep remembering it's all a temporary thing, and hopefully we get to the other side with everyone we care about. So as long as that happens, and hopefully it shouldn't go on for too much longer.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We're in now, what are we, the third week this week? We've been told to stay indoors. In terms of the football season, we've been told, the last I heard, indefinitely suspended. So we've just got no idea when that's going to come back, do we? I mean,
there's been lots of rumours with it. Initially, it's just been getting pushed back a week at a time. A couple of weeks, and yeah, so now us boys don't even know, so obviously we're all speculating on the group chat every now and then. I have heard rumours that it is going to continue again, but like I said, you just don't know. My guess is as good as anyone else's with it all. So
have you been sat with any training plans, or any sort of, does Chris give you sort of training regimes to do?
Yeah, so Chris has been brilliant, to be fair, even before this whole lockdown situation. All of the boys have given him high praise. I was just coming into my next stage of the rehab, so I was literally just before this, I was starting up my running, and I was doing a few sessions with him just around the pitch of where the boys were training, and he's got some brilliant ideas, really, to keep us all as fit as we can. So he's been giving us all separate individual training program to follow. It's given us an app called Strava. I don't know if you've heard of it. I think anyone could load it, really. And we've just been following, just running sessions. So it's a bit annoying because you'd ideally like to do a bit of ball work, but there's only so much you can do with when you're on your own, really. It's hard to pass to yourself. it's all going okay.
So where are you in terms of, obviously, you picked up the injury, where are you in terms of fitness-wise? Obviously, I know you probably were doing bits and pieces, but where are you at the moment in terms of what you're able to do?
Yeah, so I'm probably one of the only ones, well, me and Paul also are probably one of the only two that have benefited from this whole situation, because I'd expect for myself, I think it may be the same for Porsu, but I'm not too sure. But for myself, I'd expect to be back training with the boys whenever that is. I know if all of this wasn't happening, then I would have probably been looking to get... I would have probably had a game maybe a couple of weeks ago with the 23s, and then obviously would have built it up from there, obviously, depending how well I'd done in the game and how I felt. Then obviously tried to sneak into the squad and then just go from there, really. So it would have been right around now whether I would have been, I don't know, well, up selection, should I say. When we all resume the training, I'd like to think that I can go straight back in with the boys and hopefully I won't feel too far behind it because, well, we've all had time off now, so.
Yeah. We chatted to Glenn last week and he was saying in an ideal world, he'd like, probably have 3 weeks, if the season is to restart, whenever that is, he'd like to have 3 weeks, and possibly get some like friendlies and stuff like that. How does that sit with yourself? Because obviously, because you've been out for so long, I know you probably would like, you know, your 23 games and training and stuff like that. Where are you with that? Because obviously, I think with players, naturally, I'm not too sure what sort of weights you can do and stuff like that, but you need, even the players that are not playing now, naturally lose that match sharpness. How long do you think you would need realistically to be sharp enough to play?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this isn't my first long-term injury, so I've had a little bit of experience in terms of that. But I've kind of always been in a mindset and in a situation where you've kind of always had to be prepared. If you get chucked in, you've kind of always had to be ready. Obviously, when I was a young kid, first breaking into the first team, I think there was a period where I was on the bench for the first team, but not playing. I think I would have only been 17, 18 or whatever I would have been. And there was 23s games going on midweek, but it was a time where I think we only had 3 fit centre-half ready. So I was on the bench, the next one ready to come on. But because we didn't have no other cover, I wasn't actually being allowed to play in the 23s games at the time. So I think I went about 6 to 8 weeks for... I think it would have been before my debut, either before my debut or my second spell, where I didn't have any game time at all. So I've kind of always been in that mindset where if you're going to play, then you kind of just have to be ready. I mean, yeah, obviously a lot of people say there's nothing like match fitness really, so, which is true, but if you look at the players that are older players in the game, then you kind of have to use that experience. So what's to say, where's their... obviously fitness level is going to be. So I've kind of got to just use other parts of the game to make up for that lacking part, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and also when we were chatting again, it was actually a really good conversation, obviously, where we were with that. One of my worries about restarting the league at any point is that we're going to go in with 9 games left. And it's not like you can have a little mini pre-season and then go into, let's be fair, 9 cup finals. That's what they're going to be. You know, Tranmere hit the great form just before the, you know, not that it is any, you know, anyone's fault, but of course they had 3 wins, didn't they, on the trot.
Yeah.
I sort of said about it, it's probably going to be, for me, it's not going to be necessarily about technical ability. Of course, that's quite important, but probably mental strength as well, because you're going to literally go in. I don't know how the fixtures would work. So, you know, I don't know if they would follow the same format or they would try and do something easier, but do you think that's probably the case that the mental strength is going to be a big thing? Because you're not going to go into the first game of the season. You're going into a season that's literally 9 games left.
Yeah, 100%. That's why not only has Chris been setting up running sessions to do, but the gaffer's also been, he's been making us analyse games. Previous games, old games, games we've been a part of, most recent games, and also opposition games as well. So he's been making sure that we're all on the ball and trying to keep that focus and make sure that we all understand what the good things are that we've got to do when it comes back to it and what obviously the things that we've got to cut out. So he's keeping things fresh in our mind. But I think you're right, 100%. The mental side of things is massive because like you said, it is when it, if it does start back up again, which is a strong possibility, we've 100%, we've got to be ready for it. Like 9 big cup finals, like you said. I mean, we can draw, a lot of the boys can draw strength from last year's great escape, really. And I'm sure we'll use that if it comes down to it. Obviously, the annoying thing is that we all know that we should be in a better position than what we are. Obviously, our heads are above the water now, but fortunately, we're just making it a bit harder for ourselves than what we have to. But like I said, I mean, me and all the boys, especially the gaffer as well, we're all confident that we'll be more than fine. That's one thing about the gaffer since he's come in. He's one thing that anybody can tell about him is that he strives for so much more. We want to make sure that we're safe, and I'm positive we'll do that.
I mean, we've been pretty much in every game. We had the heavy defeat at Oxford just before the break, but aside from that, we've been in every single game. I think losing 2-1 is our most common scoreline by an absolute mile this season. Just showing you the fine margins, because if you only turn two or three of those in, flip them round, and then we're quite happily sat at mid-table. I mean, that frustration that the squad have had this season, being so close, being so many times in games and not getting over the line.
Yeah, you could look at it in two ways, really. Obviously, it is very frustrating, but then at the same time, it tells us that we're not a million miles away from obviously being a lot higher up than what we are. So I think, like you said, there are such fine margins. So I think we have just got to be, I think a big thing in this league is being ruthless. Obviously taking your chances, obviously it's all simple stuff really, but taking your chances when you are on top and not conceding silly goals. Such basic things, but like you said, it's not a lot that we have to change and tune to be getting a lot of a winning streak really. There's a lot of things we need to improve on, and we know that, and we're trying to get better, obviously whenever we can train. There's fine margins, and I think the biggest thing is ruthlessness.
I mean, how have you found, or what are your thoughts on the division this season in terms of which teams have struck you as being the strongest, which games have been perhaps the hardest for the squad, in their opinion? Like, we've looked at teams, I think we thought, I know we lost heavily to them at their place, but actually when they came down to King's Meadow, we all thought Oxford looked a very, very strong team, possibly potentially one of the strongest we've seen. I thought Rotherham looked a very, very strong side. What does the squad feel? Is that not really a conversation you have?
No, yeah, we always speak about it. Like, just obviously every morning we're in the change room together for a good hour and a half. Obviously when we are training, not at the minute, but so we talk about all sorts really, but including how the league's going, including what we think about it. I think we've all said that this year is not really felt as strong compared to other years. There's not been too many standouts, but then like you said, I think they've always been a good side in my opinion over the last few years. Whenever I've played against them, you've always kind of known you've been in for a good game. I think they try to play football the right way. So when they get it right, then it does end up coming off quite well for them. Some teams can't get near them. Rotherham, like you said as well, they've always been that team that's gone up and down between the Champ and League One. So they can't seem to find their level at the minute between that, which one it, either or it is. Who else would I say is up there? I'm surprised by Wickham. I'm not the biggest fan of the way they play, but at the end of the day, it's effective. I think he's a good manager, although Gareth Ainsworth, obviously, I think creates a good team spirit. And I think that's obviously what's carrying them a little bit, in my opinion. Obviously, I know the Beast is still performing very well. I think he's their top goal scorer this year, is he?
Must be.
Yeah.
I think he is, yeah. So, because I think when we played Wickham at home, I felt pretty comfortable. I know it was a 0-0, but yeah, I mean, I know their wheels started to fall off a little bit. Who else is up there? Who's up the top?
The big surprise for me this season, apart from Wickham, obviously, Coventry. Didn't see Coventry doing a lot of them. We lost out to them. Another injury time goal. Lost out to them. Do you have any recollections of that game? What you thought of them that night?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. Like you said, with the 2-1s, the fine margins. They were quite good, to be fair. I think they're capitalising on using Birmingham ground, because I think their home record is very impressive this year. So they seem to be obviously doing well there. But yeah, did we go 1-0 down? And then we pulled it back to 1-1. And then we had a glorious chance. I think it, Michael Felivi had a header in the 6-yard box. Yeah. Made it 2-1, or it may have even been 2-0.
That's right, yeah.
We may have even gone 1-0.
Might have been 2-0, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember at half-time, we were all a bit glad that he didn't put that away, because he's a top player, to be fair. I think we've missed him a little bit. I know he ended up coming out at a similar time to me, and then obviously they just terminated his loan, but I always felt like he could have shown more of what he had. He had a little something different, a little bit of a spark. I don't think he always got the opportunity to show it or deliver it in games. But yeah, so it was a shame his loan was cut short. But yeah, it was a killer, because obviously they scored and literally, I think it was the last kick of the game. I think we were hanging on a little bit last 5 or 10 minutes. At the same time, I think we ended up finishing the game with 3 up top. So I think we obviously felt like there was a potential chance to nick the game. That's it, yeah. Because I think we had Adam Rothrow, Piggs and Quezzy up top for the last 10 minutes. So obviously we must have felt like in the game that we was obviously doing enough to maybe even go on and nick it. Hindsight, we should have probably kept hold of the draw and appreciated the fact they were at the top of the table at that time. I think they was as well. So, but yeah, they were tough opponents. Yeah, I mean, 5 points there with a game in hand is impressive at this stage.
Just looking back, actually, because obviously it's really weird. We're having a laugh with Andy Wordsworth and that about squad numbers. We had a sort of a quiz, and Wordsworth couldn't even remember what his squad number was. It's been that long since. So yeah, I'm just looking back, and of course we did take the lead against Coventry. Marcus Force with a penalty.
Yeah,
how can we forget about that?
Yeah,
it's frustrating, really, but it all brings me on to, how frustrating has it been this season? Because one of the biggest problems we've had this year is injuries, as you fully well know. But we've seemed to have injuries to key players, but also, you know, we were chatting to Joe Piggott last week and saying it must be difficult because he's literally had probably 3 or 4 or 5 different strike partners, all through that. Has that been difficult for the squad? Because naturally, we're not scoring loads of goals and we're not conceding them, but has that been awkward? Because of course it means that you sort of guys know that you've got to try and keep a clean sheet, really, or keep it tight. Because, you know, just naturally, we haven't had the forwards this year to really get us out of trouble.
Yeah, I think we all need to take a bit of responsibility, really. I think in general, I think you need to take ownership of your own game. And I think, obviously, the times where us defenders are conceding silly goals and the times where we'll probably be putting chances away, I think everyone needs to obviously hold their hands up and appreciate the fact that we want to be doing more. We want to be doing better. If anyone's happy with where we've been the last few seasons, should I say, then you're not in the right industry, I don't think. If you're not aiming to be at the very top, then there's something wrong there. So yeah, I think we all know that. I think the amount of conversations we have on the training field where we are trying to just spur each other on, and there's been times over the years where we've obviously got in debate between defenders and forwards, but we all need to realise that it's a collective thing, right? I think us defenders need to be chipping in with more goals, and obviously you can't just keep clean sheets between the back guys. You need your whole team working as a unit. You need obviously the pressing from the front, and it to be the whole way through on the same wavelength. So I mean, obviously our best run of form probably within the last, would I say, since we've been in League One, maybe it's the back end of last season. And that's why I think there were so many people so optimistic about this coming season. And there's just been a few, obviously, up and downs. Obviously, there's the situation with Wally. There's just been so many different factors where we haven't seemed to have got our rhythm yet. I'm confident we'll stay up this season, and it'll be really interesting to see, obviously, when Glyn has the gaffer has a full pre-season under his belt so he can implement his own ideas, because it's hard to overtake halfway through without changing it too much. So I think he's tried to tweak little bits whilst keeping the same thing that's been working at the same time as well.
You were saying about, obviously, it's important as a team that you all chip in, and yeah, of course. One of the things that I've noticed with the 3-5-2 formation that Dean's playing is that because we push our wing backs so high up, we do tend to get a lot of sort of corners from basically because we, you know, if we're going to attack, a lot of times we go down the sides of them. Has it been disappointing that we haven't capitalised? I think, you know, we've quite a lot of games with loads of corners. Are you centre half at the moment itching to get onto one of them? Because I think Terrell scored a winner, didn't he, against Pompey?
Yeah.
But, you know, I suppose one of the frustrations for this season, we probably haven't been as great from the corners, have we? Has that been a disappointment? Is it something you're working on in training?
Yeah, we do work on it in training. I think the gaffer knows it as well. And I think he's obviously been, I think he's been telling us as well. Sometimes it's not always about, like, because the delivery's been good.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's more about your passion and your like, determination to get onto the end of it rather than just hoping that it's going to fall your way and obviously then delivering it. So I do think we need to have a bit more belief and a bit more drive with it. But again, that's one of the things that we do need to, obviously, if we want to be up the top end of the table, that's one of the things we do need to, that we do need to add to and improve on. And it's good that we can recognise where, like, things that we can improve on, because it's only going to help make us better as a team. And that, in my opinion, that I think a lot of people know, is something that does need to be addressed.
How have you found the 3-5-2, in terms of as a defender? Because obviously it means you, normally, if they play two up, you have one spare, but we haven't had many, I'm trying to think now, not many teams have played one up, but how have you found it? Because obviously it means that maybe one of you three can come out of it. Has it been easy to adapt to?
Yeah, I mean, I've quite enjoyed it, to be fair. Obviously, I kind of took the middle role, but I don't actually mind if I was either side of the middle. I think if you understand the game, then I think you should be able to adapt to those different scenarios. All it is pushing your two fullbacks essentially further on, and you're using the middle one as a spare to more or less communicate and try and read the game and cover either side of the centre half, really. I mean, obviously, it just allows us to have an extra man in the middle, which I like having three in midfield, because I think most teams do that, whatever formation they play. Most teams seem to have that three in the centre, and where you've got to try and control the game from, really. I've personally quite enjoyed it. Obviously, there's all different opinions, really. I guess it depends who you play with as well. It makes a factor. But for me, I don't mind the 3-5-2.
I mean, you mentioned the fullbacks or the wingbacks in that system. One player that's come in this season on the left-hand side, Paul Osu, you sort of referenced him very briefly earlier. I mean, what had you heard of him before he suddenly appeared in the team, and how do you sort of describe just how well he came into it and the impact he had, especially when he first came in that first 3 or 4 weeks, where it felt like we had a real find on our hands?
Yeah, he's been really impressive. Obviously, he's still so young as well at the minute. I think he's 18, 19, whatever he is. Sure, most of the fans and you guys have heard about his story, how obviously we got him from the college setup, and then obviously he got dragged into the under-18s with Mark Robinson, and has just kicked on from there. So I know his career's been very, very kick-started within the last year or so. So it's all, everything's still probably fresh for him, even at that left wing-back role, because I think he used to be a centre-forward. He's been very impressive when he got brought in. He's a live wire. I think obviously his biggest thing is his pace, so I think we utilised that quite well in certain games. And I think the problem for him was that he was almost too much of our out and out danger, because I think after a few weeks, I think teams started to double up on him. And they started to obviously recognise that was a little bit of our danger man, actually. Which was good, really, because it drags two people out of position at the same time as well. But I think he's still got more to show and impress as well, and I'm sure he wants to. I know he scored quite early on against, was it Rochdale at home? So he's got a goal to his name already, but that's one thing that I reckon he'll want to be adding to, especially the fact that he used to be a centre-forward. It's more goals, really. But yeah, his pace is scary. When we do like 20-metre sprints and things like that, it's just, you just don't want to be standing next to him, basically.
Who else would you put in that bracket alongside him? Who are the fastest players in the squad? I'm thinking someone like Adam Roscrow must have a bit of pace on him.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's up there. I wouldn't put him on Paul Osu's level. I'd say the other Paul Callum-Bailly. Definitely got pace. To be fair, Adam Roscrow, he does deserve to be in shout. Yeah, I'll say Paul and Adam are probably the two that spring to mind initially.
And just going through some questions, we did get some questions beforehand. So just very quickly, Graham Stacey, who's on our Don's Trust board, has come with a few questions. So he's basically saying, who has been your toughest opponent?
They're probably bigger names, but I'd say, I know it was only pre-season, but I'd say Troy Deeney, when we had Watford, just his physical presence and his power. Mo Salah, when we had Chelsea. I mean, I know he wasn't the same at Chelsea as what he is at Liverpool, but he was a nippy little thing to handle then. And I'd say Romain Sawyers from Brentford. He's now at West Brom, but I remember when we had them in the EFL Cup, and I think we were 1-0 up, and then he's ended up getting the equaliser when he bent it from top corner from about 30 yards, and they've ended up doing us an extra time 3-1. But yeah, Romain Sawyers, I remember thinking he was a special talent that night.
It's interesting you say about Mo Salah, because I remember chatting to the boys about it a little while ago, because when that pre-season game, when we lost late on, didn't we, 3-2 to Chelsea, I think Mo Salah had just come back from like a loan deal. He wasn't even getting into a Chelsea team back then.
Yeah, he wasn't a big name. That's what, like, my dad ends up saying now. He was looking, obviously I was only about 18, and I was into play against a big club like Chelsea. I know it was only pre-season, but they still had players like Terry and all different players, whoever they had at the time. And, my dad was reading the team sheet, and he was saying he could see it lined up at Vanavit, all of this, and he was getting a bit worried. He's looking at the centre forwards lining up. He said he saw this name, and he was quite happy because he was thinking, I don't want my son to get embarrassed. So he didn't really recognise the centre forward. It turns out it was Mo Salah at the time. So it would probably be one of the hardest ones of the lot.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, but he wasn't really getting into the side at the time.
Think about tough opponents. One of the things that I think I've been impressed with is when you played up against Wickham, and you said they're no one's favourite team, are they? Let's be fair. You've always done well against Bayo. Is that just generally because he suits your game? Because physically, I can imagine you can give as good as you get with that. Or is that just the training sessions that you just knew sometimes when to go for the ball, when to, you know, you're not going to win the ball, play set?
I think it was the training session. When I was coming through, the only way that Neil Ardley said to me at the time that I will get into the side, he said, is when you start proving that you can handle our forwards on the training pitch. And that was probably a good way to look at it, really, because at the time, I think we had Bayo, we had Tom Elliott, we had Lyle Taylor. I think it was either Cody McDonald or Adi Aziz, one of the two. We always had four every year. And he said, when you start showing me, I think this was a chat we had in pre-season at the time, and I felt like I'd had a really good pre-season, done well, and I felt like I'd stake a claim to maybe have a chance to start getting some games in for the first team. And that was basically what he said to me. He said, when you start showing me that you can cope with those forwards, then I'll bring you into it. And so that was always my challenge every day in training. That was probably my best test. That was probably my biggest help for my career, really. Having those different four, but good types of strikers to deal with and try and learn how to deal with them, probably my biggest help in my kickstart my career anyway. So yeah, there was a lot of training days where Bayo would beat me up for fun, especially when I was a lot younger at 17. I mean, I soon had to learn to bring just little things like bringing my arms up just to stop getting all the elbows in my face. And the amount of times he would do it, but he wouldn't even mean it. He was a good guy, to be fair, Bayo, especially for all the youngsters. He loved always trying to help us out. So yeah, I think that put me in good stead for it. I felt pretty not comfortable, but I'm always not as in for a game. But yeah, I'd like to think I did all right against him in the few times I've played against him.
Definitely. You've got a few strikers there. Taylor, Elliot. I can say, well, the four strikers we had that got us up, well, part of the team that got us up into League One in the first place. Great, as you say there. In big personalities as well, though, all of them. Did you find that in the dressing room was you said like that it was great with the younger players, but was there also a slight, is it slightly intimidating in a little way when you've got such large personalities, or does it help you sort of bond the team together more?
I think it helps bond the team together a bit more, really. I think that's one thing that all of the, from the promotion winning side squad that we had, I think that's one thing that they all relate back to, and they always said at the time that our team spirit was probably our biggest thing, even though we had a lot of talent in that side, obviously the likes of Lau and Tom Elliott who've gone on to higher. I think that the team spirit and the fact that we had big characters, like people like Cal Kennedy, Andy Bartsham, Bayo, Lyle, like there were like personalities. It was just so infectious within the squad, and it just kind of brought everyone together, really. I always remember when we were going through the playoff, and obviously I know we was probably, in terms of form-wise, we was probably one of the stronger ones coming into it, but I always remember as soon as we got into the playoffs, all of the boys said, right, that's it, we're going to do this, we're going to get promoted, we've come this far from how far adrift we were, this is done. I always remember like when we went up to Wembley the day before, and just on the day, all of the boys, like not in a cocky kind of way, just in a kind of way, there was just so much belief in that squad and just togetherness that we knew we were going to do it together. So yeah, I think it's massive to have different types of personalities and characters and people that are going to obviously be stand up and be counted for. I think that's massive in times of going well or wrong.
I mean, we've certainly got some personalities in the squad at the moment, and Stu has picked a selection of them. I think, Stu, you've got a little game you want to play with Will, with five members of the, I say squad, it's four members of the squad, Stu, and one member of the coaching staff.
Yeah, I've done a George and just stretched the rules a little bit for my vibe. So, yeah, one thing we'd like to do in a podcast is just have some fun games, so nothing too bad at all. So basically what I've got five facts about a player, and one of them is false.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Have you done research to get these facts, or are you?
Sorry?
Done your research to get these facts off the... Off
yeah, I've not been horrible, though. I've not been really horrible like George in the game. But what I've done, I've been nice as well, though. I've actually given you a choice. So you can choose. So, who do I choose out of five people? Terrell Thomas, Luke O'Neill, Andy Wordsworth, Joe Piggott, or Ashley Bate?
We'll go for my centre-half partner, Double T, Terrell.
Cool. Okay. So, like I say, on one of these is false, but the others are true.
I reckon there's going to be some back to it. I don't know why. He's very unpredictable.
So, Terrell scored his first league goal for Wimbledon at home to Pompey this season in a 1-0 win.
Okay.
Number two, Terrell had two separate loan moves to Woking in 2015-16 and the next season 2016-2017. Terrell's squad number this season is number 6.
Yeah.
Terrell's last game on loan for Sutton United in 2018 was at Wembley in a 3-2 defeat to Boreham Wood.
Yeah.
And final one is Terrell has only picked up one booking this season. What one's false?
I feel like as you're reading them out, the first four I was quite confident they're true. So the only one I don't know about is booking. I'm trying to think. I don't remember him getting too many bookings though in general. I'm going to go for the booking one. I reckon he's got more than one. I reckon he's got two. He's got two.
He's got one.
Oh, that's right.
And he only got one last season as well.
We were chatting to
Terrell about that because we noticed that he doesn't get any bookings. And for a centre-half, he's basically saying he tries to stay on his feet as much as he can.
He's a very honest player. He's just very, very honest in general, all round. Like, I think that's why he's so likable. He's so honest, like, and in terms of his defending as well. But yeah, I'm a big fan of his, to be fair. But yeah, like on the pitch, he's just an honest. But like you say, he doesn't dive in too much, and he's not really plays the game quite fairly, really. Guys, one of the others. What?
Yeah. So George, Nick, what's your thinking on this one?
I was with Will. I was quite confident all the first four were correct, but when you said the fifth one, I knew that was to be true. So is it to do with Woking and his loan spells there?
Sure.
I'm thinking it's something to do with the years wrong and the Woking loan deal.
That'd be really sneaky if it is.
I've done all of you. So the one that was false was the Wembley one. Yeah. So Terrell's last game was actually a semi-final at home to Bournemouth. They lost 3-2, but it was actually at Gander Green Lane.
Yeah, because Michael Falivi played in that as well, I think, for Bournemouth. Ah, I should have known that. I just knew that.
I'm quite impressed with that. I thought George would get that one. Do you normally...
Of course. Normally
I was thinking of Wembley, but I just thought everyone else was thinking that must be true, so I must be going mad. Yeah.
You've done well, because you made the lie sound a little bit believable.
He's very sneaky like that. He's also celebrated, which is, he actually punched the air in celebration that he got one over, which is like...
I thought George would get it, because George sometimes is quite switched on with that, but... George, I'm out of practice, mate.
Who's got the
knowledge non-league or generally?
Generally. Football knowledge.
Okay, football knowledge. I think I would say that George is very knowledgeable when it comes to all the historical facts and figures of this player, that player, and where they played, da-da-da-da. No one knows football, the game, more than Stu knows football. And then that just leaves me. I'm just the other one.
just
make up the numbers.
The way we're different is you remember a lot of the stuff that happened sort of like last season and stuff like that, where I struggle. If you ask me about a goal that happened in the Premier League and sort of my early years, I can recall all of those. But you asked what happened last season.
No chance. Tell you what, though, I will tell you a good memory of a Premier League season linking in with Tyrell Thomas's one booking. We had a centre half back in the day, Dean Blackwell, very similar player.
Oh yeah.
Went through a whole season without picking up one booking, and he was never present alongside Chris Perry. The opening day of the following season, he got sent off within like the first 20 minutes. It was because it was away at Watford, and you know that they like to, they go down quite easily, those Watford players. You know what they're like. They're that sort of team. So I think he got conned a bit there, but never mind.
Well, at least they're living close to Watford in terms of they're only a league apart now.
Anyway, moving on. do we have any more listener questions, Stu, or do we want to get on with the Paul Osu game?
No, let's go ahead with the Paul Osu game.
Okay, George, this is where... George, before you carry on, right, I know that no one can see you. It's only us that can see you. This is going out audio only. But you've got to be careful with this microphone because it is looking a bit... The way you're holding it, a bit Nazi-esque.
Cool. Yeah. We're joining Will as well. We'll help you with this one.
Yeah, we'll let George
go. Happy days.
Okay, so this is a game where in the first round, it's about a former Wimbledon player who you've played alongside. The first round of clues is five players this player has played with. The second round of clues is the two managers he's played under. And then there's a third and final clue. Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, so the first clue with the five players are Dorian Devay, Stephen Purchase, Curtis Weston, Michael Collins, and David Connolly.
What's the first one?
Wow.
Dorian Devay.
Michael Collins.
And David Connolly.
This is the okay.
So David Connolly would be... Crikey, he played for Lowe's, didn't he? Was he at Luton? No, everyone's played for Luton, didn't
they? No, Watford.
Ah, there you go.
This is someone I've played with, yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings three seasons into it.
Could be for when David Connolly was at Wimbledon, and Michael Collins was at Wimbledon as well.
Michael Collins went to Newport, if I remember.
Oxford, Newport.
Oh, yeah, Oxford as well, yeah.
Where was he at in his younger days?
David Perkins, I'm trying to think now where he... The other two, I can't remember.
Stephen Purchase.
Oh, okay.
No chance of that.
Any ideas, Nick?
No, not a clue.
George is making these harder.
He really is.
Yeah. Although, what I would say to you, Will, though, no pressure, but Glyn Hodges got his on the first round.
Well, I have a name in mind, but I don't know if there's any... I can't think of the logic for why I've got the name in mind. Do I get a guess?
No, you have a guess you want.
Andy Barcham.
Oh, not again. First round.
Hey!
Is it Barch?
Yeah.
George, wow.
Come on, George. I don't see the link.
There was one of the names. Name the five players, who they were.
Okay, so Dorian Devite, who came through with Barch at Tottenham. Stephen Purchase, they were at Leighton Orient together. Yeah, Curtis Weston at Gillingham.
That's Michael the one Collins, I
mean. Yeah. Weston, Michael Collins at Scunthorpe, and David Connolly was at Portsmouth at the same time as Barch.
Collins at Scunthorpe.
Yeah. Portsmouth, yeah. Yeah, I knew that when you said Curtis Weston, I knew that Barch played with him, and that was the only name popping to mind. So it's a bit of luck, bit of luck.
What are the other clues, George?
Well, the managerial clues were going to be Andy Heseltine, who was obviously at Gillingham, and Brian Laws at Scunthorpe.
Okay.
And then the third clue was going to be that he left us in the summer if you guys were still struggling.
Lowe's left in the summer.
Yeah, that's why I was a good clue. About 10 players it could have been.
That's well done.
All right, George, that's two in a row now that you've got done on the first round. So whoever's up next, got to make it a little bit trickier.
Yeah.
Well, we're hopeful that we're going to have... we might have Premiership star on Thursday, we're hoping, aren't we, guys?
Oh, I wonder who that might be, Stu.
Yeah,
he did play for Wimbledon.
He did.
Last season.
There's loads of Premier League players that have played for AFC Wimbledon, Stu, in the recent past. Loads and loads. Right, well, before you go, you know, I know we played this game with you last time. I've already told you this game's coming up.
Yeah.
It's a very, very quick fire, either or first answer that pops into your head game. It's called the yes-no game, even though many of these answers are not yes or no. But anyway, just be careful for the very last one. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
So, we've already clarified that Luton or Watford you go for?
Luton.
There we go. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
Monica or Rachel?
Rachel.
Scott Wagstaff's beard or Anthony Wordsworth's moustache?
Waggy's beard.
I'm going to come back to that in a second. Willem Dafoe or William Wordsworth?
William Dafoe.
Alan Pardew or Alan Partridge?
Alan Pardew.
Marmite, love or hate?
Hate.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
VAR, yes or no?
No.
Adebayo Akinfenwa or Lyle Taylor?
I don't know if this is with or against, but I'm just going to go Akinfenwa.
You've upset Stu this week by going for that one, but never mind. And finally, when you make a cup of tea, do you put the bag in the mug first or do you put the milk in the mug first? This is the final question.
Bag in first all day long.
Correct. 100%. And Stu loves Lyle, so we just have to be careful with that.
Without Lyle, we wouldn't be in League One, so I hope.
Well,
He was probably underappreciated, I think. I think a little bit, just in terms of, I feel like he didn't get too much recognition, even how he was always seemed to be popping up with the goals, and that's probably something that we're not really missing. Peter's obviously taken that role on, but yeah, I do think, I think he felt a little bit underappreciated at the time. Even though all the fans loved him, so there you go.
What do you think about his penalty style? Because I said tomorrow.
Go on. Yeah. No, go on. What I was just going to say,
I've chatted Lyle since he left about new penalty, and I keep reminding him about how poor, but he did have some dodgy penalties. But his new penalty style. Could you ever take a penalty like that?
Well, his conversion rate's obviously working for him, isn't it? I wouldn't take a run up that slow in a game. I think he used to do it sometimes for a bit of a laugh in training. I think I remember him just walking up to it. I do think it sums up his personality a little bit.
Yeah.
And just a little bit out there. And fair play, it's working, isn't it? So it's just composure, wait for the keeper to move and then go the other way. I normally like to make up in my mind where I'm going, stick with that. Have a fast run up and with a decent amount of power. But yeah, nice. it's obviously got a lot of speculation from people. Obviously, it's been spoken about quite a bit, hasn't it? So
yeah. And let's not forget, he scored against Luton, didn't he? Just before the season. I say the season finished. I don't know how we say it now. Yeah. But he did score against Luton, Nick, didn't he? And stood there and wound up with Luton fans. Don't say much, but...
I must admit, the one thing I love about Lyle, and this made me die laughing when we played Charlton last season, which is, because I'm always of the opinion, Will, that when a player that used to play for you comes back, if he scores against you, I've got no issue with them celebrating. I think you're playing for your team. Concentrate on what you're doing. And some of our fans got a little bit wound up by him, but I thought, well, that's what Lyle does. And I had to have a little chuckle when he got quite a lot of stick from the Luton end and then scored against them. And he let them know what he'd just done. You have to, I do, those are the players that you want playing for you, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can't knock him. I think he's at the end of the day, he's a winner, isn't he?
Exactly. Yeah.
He's got a lot of passion, and when he does something well for his team, I think you've earned the right to, obviously, like you said, celebrate or let people know. Or I know a lot of players are trying to be respectful for their old club, but I think they were pushing at the time for playoffs, weren't they? At the end of the day, he's a winner. So whatever else you like to say about him, he's a winner, and that's a good trait to have in my eyes.
So, not a lover of VAR then, Will?
No, I just think there's so much, there's been so many teams and fans that have just not been happy with it in certain situations and let down by it. And like, the one that sticks in my mind is from when Declan Rice handballed it against, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was to get a late equaliser for
Sheffield United, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, Sheffield United, that's it. Yeah, so... I just think it takes too long. It disrupts the rhythm of the game. I think if you could maybe just keep it to goal line technology, literally just the goal line, obviously just to sort out those situations. Obviously, because you can think back to obviously when England had Germany in the World Cup and Lampard won quite clearly across the line. If it could clear situations where has the ball crossed the line or not, to literally just have it then maybe I'd be more warm into it. But when it's bringing it back to a minute back in or 30 seconds back in the move, when the move's carried on, I think it gets a bit ridiculous, really.
Yeah. It's like two different games, isn't it? In terms of, if you think about it, I laugh because I find Premiership, I like watching, but I actually enjoy it more this season because it's so funny in terms of the VAR stuff. Because I said to the guys beginning the season, you're going to see strikers not celebrating that much because you look a bit of a, you look a bit stupid, don't you, if you're going around celebrating and VAR says your heel was offside or something like that. But
yeah.
one of the things I think, it's like watching two different games, because I'll give you an example. Shrewsbury drew against Liverpool, didn't they, in the FA Cup, which wasn't played for the VAR, then went to Anfield, and because it was a Premiership ground, VAR was introduced, which for a player must be crazy, because you're playing a set of rules in really that sort of side of it, isn't it? Could you ever see it being dropped down into League One?
Yeah, considering it's still part of the same, essentially still part of the same match, you know, it's in two different games. That must have been very strange. Well, not so much strange, but it, obviously it feels like, I know it's the same for both teams, but in fact it wasn't the same rules in both of the games. One's obviously for the home fixture and vice versa. Yeah, that must have been strange for them, to be able to cope with. For me, I just think it's just, You're looking at a game and you're not sure if your team scored or not, and how it's been popping up on Sky Sports. I've done it, obviously, well, most of the time, 3 o'clock kickoff, obviously we're all at the AFC Wimbledon. Well, for home games anyway, but for away games when people are following Sky Sports, it's just, you don't know if a team scored or not, they're debating it on there and they'll wait to find out. I just think, yeah, it's not for me. Some people may like it, but I think I've heard more people say no than yeah. For it. But they may look into that, the general feedback. It's still early doors of it, so they could end up amending it, fine tuning it maybe. You never know.
Well, thankfully, we don't have video on this podcast, otherwise, listeners would have to be looking at my and Stu's face all the time, which nobody wants. But, Will, you've put up with us for today. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. Much appreciated. For the second time. Next time we get you on, we'll have to get you some sort of hat trick ball for your third appearance on the show.
That's a great shout. Yeah.
Whenever that might be. And we just look forward to seeing you play for us again, because, who knows? Who knows when that might be, whether
and
we kick
where
off
it might be.
In August or whether this season gets completed in June time, who knows?
I know, it's long overdue for me. So I feel like I've got a lot to make up for, which I've got in my head, and I feel like I'm ready to make up for lost time.
Well, we wish you all the best getting back to full fitness and getting the season underway. And we say, Will, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy the rest of your podcast.
Cheers, Will.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, Will.
Thanks.
Okay, always a pleasure speaking to Will. And as we say, hopefully we shall speak to him again in the very near future, or perhaps next season. Like we say, whenever next season becomes a thing. Who knows? Who knows what's going on in life at the moment? We are still in lockdown, and we've all come up with some suggestions of things to do during our spell in lockdown. But before we get on to those, we have some random news stories to bring you. Now, I say this every time we do this, but George, we have to explain what we mean by random news stories. In fact, Stu, you've done it as well. My word. You've gone for football news stories.
Well, there's nothing else to talk about, is there? It's a football podcast.
It is a football podcast, but we're in lockdown.
It's not wrestling, Nick.
Well, I have not gone for wrestling, in fairness. I have gone for something completely random and mad, because all we've got, basically, you pick up a newspaper today, and it's half a newspaper full of coronavirus-related talk, and then you go into the back, and they're finding things to fill column inches with because they've got no sports to talk about. I mean, let's start with one of those football things that was in the paper today, Stu, because you've got the name Kyle Walker on your list. What would you like? What news story are you possibly discussing?
Yeah, mine wasn't much. There's a few stories, I think, that I sort of linked in. I think I sort of budgeted again in terms of the reputation of the Premiership at the moment. Football generally, you know, this is two examples now, Jack Grealish and Kyle Walker, crazily, obviously, and I know their club have probably said, look, what you do, a message to the fans, you're very influential, can you do that? And they are influential, and then they go and do something, you know, the total opposite of that. You know, Will Nightingale, we've just had, has done a message for, as you know, as club captain, has done a message for the fans, and I trust, to be honest with you, I trust Will that he ain't going out, do you know what I mean? Because he's just that sort of honourable guy. But I just think the Premiership reputation at the moment is very dodgy in terms of, if you look at the fact that they gave the extra 125 million, but if we look at that, that's actually an advance on what money they would have got anyway. And the three clubs, you know, Newcastle, Liverpool and Spurs, who have done the furlough for their fans, it's just, I think sometimes I think at the moment they've proven how much they live in that Premiership bubble, because they fail to recognise that people are losing jobs left, right and centre. And the furlough wasn't to grab taxpayers' money for a rich Premier League. So I think mine's just generally the reputation. And I think, do you know what, it'd be interesting to see if fans remember this when the season. I know your Geordies are passionate and Spurs fans are glory hunters and Liverpool are just based up there. But yeah, I think it's just, they've got to start acting a bit more responsible at the moment because their reputation is going to shred.
Saw a woman walking down the street the other day with a big fur coat on, but she'd let it slip and it was just around her ankles. I was like, what are you doing? And she was just like, oh, I've been furloughed. Furloughed. George, what's your news story?
I'm just going to leave that audible silence in there for a couple of seconds longer.
What do you call an audible silence?
I think it's what we just heard.
audible silence. Wow. You've just saved me. Thankfully, I made that horrendous joke, but no, you're just like, no, Nick, I'm going to get you off the hook. We're going to have an audible silence. Right, should we have a visual podcast?
Go, George.
Go on.
Okay, so my news story was published in the FC Business magazine, and it's really talking to...
Who reads that?
George.
Well, people who have an interest in industry. But it's Kieran Maguire, who's one of the leading football finance experts, and he's basically talking about how long will it take Premier League or football industry in general to return to normality? How long before we lose common sense again? Because after this, I think we're all agreed, wages will drop for footballers because clubs will tighten their budget and common sense will come in force, hopefully, when it ends in terms of club spending. Talking about how long does he think that last? How long before clubs go and start spending out of control amounts on wages and transfer fees like we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years?
5 minutes.
He says he thinks it will be 2 years before everything goes mentally, which is just mad because this summer, let's be honest, there's 10 clubs who could go under. 10 clubs, and the fact that it's only going to be 2 years before they start spending stupid money again, I think that's mad. And I think it's going to lead on to this conversation that I think the whole football industry is going to have very soon. It's about, are we going to see a wage cap? Are we going to have to see salary or spending limits put in place in all of the divisions to try and make sure that these clubs that are around now don't fall into the same trap Bury did and others are about to do over the next 3 months?
Sadly, I have no faith whatsoever in anyone in football having any remnants of common sense after this. And I think, much like everyone's saying, well, hopefully life will improve after this and we all go back to normal, I don't think it's going to take very long until we're seeing all the usual problems we had before this all happened. And I also think if you're going to see a change in football, you've already seen it happen with the lifting of the block on 3 p.m. televised kickoffs. That's not going back in place. That will remain, and that's going to be horrendous for the future of smaller and lower league clubs, unfortunately.
Yes, especially the non-league clubs at the Ryman level, whose the majority of their fan base is made up of, you know, Premier League fans who can't go and watch, you know, their team that weekend. The fact that they'll be able to watch it on 3 p.m, because let's be honest, the next step is going to be every Premier League game live in the UK, regardless of kickoff time.
Yep.
When that happens, if you support Chelsea, why are you going to go and watch Sutton or something, you know, on a Saturday afternoon when you're going to watch your team on TV? I think it's going to really affect the non-league clubs, and it will just further increase that gap we're seeing right now between all of the divisions. And it's big, you can even see it between the Championship and League One, and that gap didn't exist 3-4 years ago. And it'll be, eventually there'll be a gap clearer and clearer between every division, and eventually it is going to lead to a Super League, whether it's official or not, because teams won't be able to break into it.
But that gap with the Championship has always been there though, isn't it? Because remember I was saying about the TV money, you look at the TV money split, it's ridiculously heavy weighted in the Championship. It's 80% to the Championship, 12% to League 1 and 8% to League 2. There should never be that much disparity between two divisions, and that's why you've got a gap, and then on top of that you've got a parachute payments for the Premiership. So, you know, for me, the EFL have got to do something about this TV money. That 80% of the TV money can't be going into the Championship when they're already owned by rich owners and also got good sponsorship deals. So, but you're right about the 3 p.m. I thought that's never going to be turned back, is it?
Yeah, but I think part of the problem with that is for the EFL to pass something like that, it needs 66% of Championship clubs to vote for it. So that's never going to happen because the Championship clubs will never vote against their own interests. So the only way to try and force it would be to try and change the EFL's governance structure to make it so it's a majority of all clubs. So it doesn't matter whether you're 22nd in League 2 or 1st in the Championship, your vote is worth the same at an EFL meeting. And that's the only way we're going to see more balance across all the divisions.
You're right, and the governance is a big thing as what we were talking about at Don's Trust Board as well, weren't we? But you're right, you know, let's be fair, League 2 clubs forever voted against having more than one club come out from the conference. You know, it used to be one team, so everyone looks after their own interests. But I think you're right, George. I think the governance of the EFL have got to start showing some balls, and otherwise I can just see a lot of clubs going out of business because you say, not going to be money, and Nick rightly said, Premiership is going to be on at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
At risk of saying what I've said in every time I've been on, this is why our ownership model is so important. Because we've been saying all along, all through that debate in December, we've been saying fan ownership is sustainable because of it forces us to break even every year because we don't have someone to put money into final losses. And this sort of thing, I didn't think it'd be this, but this is the exact time why we're going to be one of the few clubs that comes out of this in a very good position. Because our owners will have the same amount of money. Our budgets will be not hugely impacted, but for companies who are, and for clubs who are investing hugely and are running at losses anyway, they're going to have major cutbacks, Nick. Whereas even if our budget stays the same, that should push us higher up the budget league. And that's why I think our ownership model is so key, because it gives us sustainability and stability at a time where the industry is, well, let's be honest, it's idiotic the way the industry's going right now. And that's why fan ownership is key going forward, and that's why I think we'll see other clubs taking that route in the next decade.
Nick, I know your comments. I can see your face.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, George, because of for time reasons, we'll pick this up another day, I think. But I have to pick you up on one line, which is, it forces us to break even every year. I must have imagined that £1 million loss we made the year before last. But anyway, moving on. This is why I want random news stories, George, because that was quite depressing. Talking about clubs going out of business and the end of football at 3 o'clock for little clubs. My random news story was a nice little fun little story about a brother and sister that moved in together. And the sister gave a list of rules to a brother he had to adhere to in order to be able to live there, including things like must be the driver if they need to go shopping, or can't friends home all the time, only sometimes, can't go out every night, and must cook the meals if they're having the same thing. Could you imagine your sibling dictating those things to you? I mean, if I was ever to move in with my brother, rules like no mess in the bedroom, well, there's no chance, because my brother is just a walking mess. It just follows him wherever he goes. But anyway, that's my... I'm not going to delve too much into this story. We need to go on to other things. Things to do in lockdown. George, have you got a non-football thing to do in lockdown?
Yeah. Rewatch the F1 Drive to Survive Netflix series, because I think it's a brilliant series. It was a brilliant watch first time around. And with very little live sport, it's a perfect opportunity to catch up.
Stu, what have you gone for?
Well, I've gone for, if you want your football fix, is that the new Sunderland Till I Die second series is on Netflix at the moment. First one was quite good. The second one is obviously them being in League One, on that side. Can I just quickly say with George, like, am I alone in laughing out loud of virtual racing? Virtual Grand National. Was there a virtual Formula One race?
Yeah, there was a virtual Formula One last night on Sky Sports F1. They're doing it to replace every F1 race weekend till it resumes. And no, you're not alone thinking it's a stupid waste of time. I think most fans agree with you.
I had my wife going mad, and I went, you do realise this is computer generated. That's what sport will look like in 20 years' time.
Because we will never be allowed out to actually compete in sports, and we'll all just be sat at home. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You've both gone for Netflix things, so I thought rather than do that, I thought I'd suggest just everybody just read a book during lockdown instead of watch TV. Pick up a book, read a book. It's very important, massively important for if you've got kids, for their education as well. So read a book. I am currently reading, this is no lie, I am currently reading Love in the Time of Cholera, which is a fantastically written book. It's a classic. I'd recommend it if you can get your hands on a copy one way or another. Birthday's going to finish off. Birthdays are a bit rubbish today. There's only one. There's two I'll do because there's famous people that I don't think are actually famous, to be honest with you. So, Stu, Paul Rudd, how old do you think he is? The comedy actor, Paul Rudd, from Anchorman and Friends, another thing.
50.
George, what do you reckon?
Oh.
He's 51. So, oh. Stu, wow. Just within a year, there is literally nobody else today of any interest, really. So, Scott Thompson of Bermondsey, South London. How old is he today, George?
74.
74? Scott Thompson is 74. Okay. Stu?
I was going to crack a joke, but it was really not appropriate. I would say he's 22.
Not far off. 27.
So there I'll win. George, you're well out.
I'm going to keep guessing over 50 because I refuse to believe anyone under that age reads a newspaper nowadays.
You know what his birthday's going? We should do it. So, like, because I was, like, one out with the first one, that means I get 1 point. George was, like, 10 out. You know, the actual accumulation, I was closer.
So you think in golf terms, like, so the lower the score, the better you are. Okay.
So I win.
Yeah, you won by a wide margin today as well. We'll try again tomorrow. Tomorrow, who's on the show tomorrow, George?
Tomorrow we've got Donstruth board member Jane Lonsdale and Academy staff James Oliver Pearce, who's been a huge part in bringing through the Academy players with develop into the first team now.
Sounds good. We'll be on iTunes and Spotify tomorrow, but for today, thank you very much for joining us. We hope you've brightened up your day for an hour or so on another lockdown day. Hey, at least it's not as warm as it was yesterday. Stu, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
George, thank you very much. Alexa Blissbag, First Milk Last. We will speak to you again tomorrow.